Hey, this is one of the biggest mistake franchisors are probably making. I've got somebody that's been there, done that, knows how to solve these problems. Stick around for this one.
This is the Franchise Pitfalls and Profit Show. Each week, we bring you the challenges and triumphs of being in the franchise development and consulting business. The things you need to make money faster. And now your host, one of the most successful franchise developers in North America, Don Shin.
Hey, welcome everybody. I've got the opportunity to share a generational experience working with two different generations of a family. Been excited, really, really excited to have this interview with Ross. Let me quick introduce you, Ross, if I can, before we dive in. Ross has over a decade in franchising. He has been there, done that in so many areas. He's been a franchisee, an area developer, a franchisor, an investor. He's been a supplier. He was with two very, very large brands, Massage Envy and European Wax. He and his family had one of the largest, if not the largest, area development organizations in the country. I think that was with Massage, probably, or was that with European Wax, or maybe
largest in both brands.
Awesome. So today he's launching a company that is addressing really one of the real hidden problems that people are either not willing to admit they have it, or it's really, really a problem and they truly don't know how to solve it. So I'm so excited that Ross has been willing to invest some time with us today, because we're going to go after, we're going to put the spotlight on it, and we're going to talk through that challenge. But yeah, I worked very closely with Ross's dad and uncle, and just awesome experience. One of my favorite relationships in life and business. And so anyway, Ross, thanks, man, for being with me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me on, Don.
Yeah, I'm excited. So let's talk just before we dive too much into the topic today. What I always like to do, because people love to hear how and why people, you know, got into the business. And we've got this really cool generational thing going on. So I know, obviously, I know a lot about how your dad, your uncle built their, you know, different master organizations, but talk to me a little bit generationally, how your dad brought you into the business, and just share a little bit of that story, if you don't mind.
Yeah, it's funny, because I have a memory of something that hadn't come up for me for a long time, but 20 years ago, I was still in high school. And the very first exposure that I got to franchising was I was actually doing on the very original LinkedIn platform prospecting for Action Coach. I was sending potential coach franchisees to other Action Coach master licensees for them to engage as prospects. And that was my first exposure to franchise. I didn't remember that until very recently, but it started kind of as a trickle like that. I had that little side hustle. And then as my family got involved, my father and uncle opened the first Massage Envy in the Northeast. And that was also during high school. So I was starting to get exposed to the brand very early on, and watching them start when that brand was pretty much in its infancy still.
Sure was.
And I had a failed stint working at the front desk there. Definitely not cut out for that work. That was part of my education and realizing my strengths and weaknesses. And it was always a curiosity of mine. I always loved the idea of getting into business with my dad. I admired him from when I was very young. And so I kind of was primed for that. And once I got out of college, I ended up doing a stint in New Jersey, working in startups in the environmental space. And that was very interesting. But the sirens call definitely brought me back to Arizona, where my family had moved by that time, to help them build out both the Massage Envy and European Wax organization. So I jumped in with them, really starting as helping them manage the RD organizations at that point from the very beginning.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I was always impressed. You know, I joke about, you see husband and wife teams in business together and stuff. And I always joke about, yeah, my wife and I would have killed each other probably, you know, been a yeah. double homicide if we'd have ever done that in earnest. But I was always so impressed with how your father and your uncle worked so well together, and yet it was a family business. So so how did that work? You know, as working for your dad, working for your uncle, just build on the story a little bit. How did that work? Because folks are going to be really interested in this family side of the business. And you and I didn't talk about doing this, but it just kind of, I thought it was
yeah.
to start off with. So.
Definitely. I think it is a curiosity for a lot of people. The way I think that it worked well was that everyone had what they were good at, and they were able to focus on that thing. And each person had that understanding of what's in my bucket that I need to take care of, and what's, you know, what somebody else's. Just like any good company, you have a good separation of duties. At the same time, I think franchise was very helpful, and this was always something that my dad had shared with us, which was franchise is very modular. You know, it's not like you're building one family company where it's one entity and it gets really big and it's impossible to chop it up. In franchise, you can be owning multiple regions, multiple locations, and those are each typically formed with their own LLC, and you could have different ownership structures. And that flexibility, I think, also lent itself really well to making something work that was multi-generational and letting people kind of carve out what they were interested in being a part of.
Yeah, thanks, Ross. Sorry to cut you off there. So how many states, how many territories did you, and I assume in most of the territories were by state, but how many territories did the family ultimately own between the two franchises?
I think it was 7 different states for Massage Envy and 9 for European Wax Center. So it was a lot of it was concentrated in the East, and the Midwest was like New York, New Jersey, mostly Long Island, Northern Jersey, Ohio, Kentucky, West Virginia, Indiana, and then Arizona and Nevada. Because by the time we moved out for European Wax, we grabbed those territories as well as RDs.
And you were still living for a while on the East Coast then versus the family.
I had a little intermission after college for about a year and a half back in New Jersey. And I was staying at Bob's house when, you know, he was still in New Jersey. And then we eventually everybody migrated west and
okay.
made it back out here.
So, yeah. So very, very interesting again for the audience, this working out of the states that you owned, or you did live in one of the states that you owned, but also the majority of your business was not in the states that you own or where you lived. So so that, boy, I probably have to have you and your dad back for that conversation.
Sure. Yes. We'll have to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that would be we have to do that. That'll be a fun, kind of the generational conversation as well as successful masters, but let's get into to today. Sorry about
that. Sure.
I'm really excited. So you were a store manager, correct?
I was attempting when I was young to manage managers. And I think that was a big learning experience for me. I never ran a store directly. And I think that's, you know, common when you're a franchisee that you wouldn't. I sort of grew up that way in the organization as well, needing to support the managers and provide them the tools and, you know, the resources they needed to be successful, but never actually directly running a store myself.
Okay. Okay. So, but you guys had the, I'm assuming you had challenges in that space, which has led you to where you are today. So why don't we talk a little bit about what do you know that people are out there experiencing? What challenges are they facing, you know, managing, let's say particularly managing multiple units, but even if they own a single unit, what did you guys experience? What had you been seeing?
Yeah. What comes to mind for me is just the common experience of trying to understand how to move the needle on performance in your franchise location and how you work with your managers to do that. And my my frame of reference for that, what I remember happening, I remember very distinctly a moment where I was in the Massage Envy manager's office in our Florham Park, New Jersey location. And I was sitting with the two managers of that location. It was a large Massage Envy doing $2 million a year in revenue. And they were very capable. They were great managers. And unfortunately, they had to deal with me when I was still going through my learning curve early on of how to work with managers and support them properly. And I remember in that moment, I was trying to figure out how to improve the performance of the location, as one would do, whether you're whoever you are managing managers, that's very common. But I did not have the understanding of how to do it. I fell into a very common trap around numbers and ended up making things worse. I was doing things that are pretty common, I think, in franchise to try to goose numbers, where it's you're either changing pay structures or you're talking about needing to do more training or contests and incentives. And these things end up happening in the business that are unintended consequences of that. Like contests and incentives they're a great sugar high, but they don't have a long-term impact. Or you change pay, you're moving someone's cheese, it's a lot of disruption in the business. It doesn't necessarily turn into improved performance.
Yeah.
And all of that, I think to your point, the question of what do people need to know that are in these situations trying to move performance in a location, the numbers are the language of business, right? Accounting numbers, that's a Warren Buffett type thing. But he also goes on to say they're an aid, not a substitute. Numbers are an abstraction of something. You're trying to measure what's happening in your business. And owners focus very heavily on numbers, naturally. Makes yeah. total sense. Yeah. And there I was in that office pointing to numbers saying, hey, this number's here, but it's got to be here. That's not helpful at all. That's not coaching. That doesn't do anything. And it just creates frustration and confusion. And one of the most insidious things that I think happens in that is it's shadow of the leader and it's learned behavior. When as an owner, your only conversations are about numbers, your managers are then going to translate that to the front line, and they're going to start just pointing at numbers, saying your numbers are here, they need to be here.
Yeah.
And they're going to mistake doing things like breaking down a monthly goal into daily goals for coaching, which yeah. it's not coaching. It could be helpful. It could be helpful to reframe that way. But there's a translation error here. And the error is, when managers are speaking to their team, they really need to be speaking through the language of process. Because process is what makes franchise possible, right? That's the atomic unit of franchise. That's how franchise is even in existence, that you have SOPs that are repeatable. And there is this profound shift that happened for me. And it really happened when I linked up with my now business partner in Epic Managers years ago, when we were working on Massage Emmy and European Wax together, which is the language of franchise businesses really starts with process. That is the anchor of everything. Mm-hmm. And when you anchor to that, and when you anchor your managers to that first, that's the first place that they should go. That's the first question they should ask. Is the process being followed? And if they don't know the answer, they go and observe. They physically observe in the location. Is this happening? Like a sports coach would.
Yep.
That's what changed everything. That was such a profound shift. And yet my young brain at the time, like, it had not clicked yet. I was so focused on the numbers, because that's all you ever hear about. You go to conference, people are winning.
Yep.
Or, oh, it's $1 million location. It's too much. Oh, numbers. Everything is celebrated around numbers. But the true rubber meets the road when you translate it to process. So I'll get off my soapbox for
No, that's great. That's great. So if you're so now, if you want to become that different kind of owner, if you want to become that different manager, what should they be thinking? What should they, literally be asking themselves? What kinds of things should they be asking their managers, like you said, instead of the numbers? So can you dive in a little deeper on that?
Definitely. So one of the concepts that we think about a lot is the doom loop. This is a Jim Collins concept from Good to Great. And he outlines this loop where you'll see disappointing results, and then you'll analyze and react to those, and you'll make some change. You change direction, you change people, you're changing pay structure, you're doing a new incentive. You feel, I got to do a team building event. We need more training. Let's make this more competitive. We need more accountability, right? That's like such a common thing, which then usually just translates to managers yelling at people, which never actually is productive. Right. And once you do that, you lose momentum. And then you have more disappointing results, which then causes you to analyze and react and change more things. And you get stuck in this cycle of just constantly changing things. So the first thing that an owner should do is reverse that and start with clarity of expectations, making sure that everybody knows that the process is the true north and that you anchor to that, because that's why you bought the franchise. That's what works.
Right.
And then build confidence and momentum in that by reinforcing it through coaching, through extreme clarity around what the expectations are with the team. That builds stability, builds consistent execution, and the flywheel turns in the right direction. And you actually, the numbers follow naturally.
So it's not always that you have the wrong person there. Sometimes I'm sure it is, but sometimes it's you're not doing the right things with the right person. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you first have to start from a place of honesty, thinking, you know, have I been extremely clear with the team about what their responsibilities are? And it's one thing to look at it through just, is the job description, you know, accurate? We happen to write job descriptions in a very detailed way, broken down into behaviors, those exact discrete behaviors that you're expecting for someone to do, rather than just a duties list. It becomes much more tangible what you're asking them to do, and also observable. So it makes it a lot easier for the manager to see, are they doing this? And that makes those conversations, the very difficult conversations that a manager is having with their team, much easier. It's not a he said, she said. It's not a, hey, your numbers are bad. What are you doing? How should you get your numbers up? Well, if they knew the answer to that, they wouldn't need the manager there as a coach.
Yep.
And that's why you never see a sports coach in their office during the game. They're watching the game from the sidelines constantly, and they're course correcting constantly. They're coaching their team. They're communicating. And if the manager doesn't know that their one job is to make sure the team is on process, then you're in trouble. And that is one of the keys with a manager, for sure.
So have you experienced, either yourself or in your new business now with clients, have you seen them, based on the wrong way of doing it or the old style, have you seen them lose good people?
Oh, absolutely. I think the challenge with that doom loop that you fall into is that you get fallout at each level of the organization. Your team, if they're put in a position to have to guess what is expected of them, where it's, hey, I need you to hit this number. Okay, well, now the employee is not sure exactly what to do for that, versus the manager saying, I just need you to follow the process. That's it. It's a very simple concept. That takes the cognitive burden off of both the employee and the manager to figure out what to do. There's nothing to figure out except to follow the franchise that's already successful in trying to replicate itself and execute consistently. The managers, when they are pushing numbers, they get upset employees, they get, you know, people quitting, you know, the rage quit, like, I'm out of here. I don't want to have this conversation about, you know, how I'm not doing well, because they're not being given the keys to how to improve that. They're just being, the numbers being pointed to. That causes managers to burn out, because, you know, having to replace so much of your team, so you're constantly having to recruit and fill holes and fill and put out fires, it's exhausting. And that's why managers, I think, really end up, you know, breaking down in these is because of this doom loop that they get stuck in. And unfortunately, some of it's driven by a franchisee, a well-meaning franchisee, but somebody who hasn't quite turned the corner yet on how to anchor to that true north of process.
So shift gears a little bit then on this, and some of the audience are franchisees themselves, multi-unit owners. Some of our audience are emerging brand franchisors. So if you were to talk to someone that's kind of relatively new in this space, I wanted to kind of transition into how do they hire? What should they be looking for? How do they do that hiring part better?
Yeah, so there's a lot of parts and pieces to this. For us in European Wax Center, we saw a dramatic change in how our stores performed when we flipped to looking for managers that were well-suited to managing through process. They were process-oriented. That meant they had the right level of detail and they cared about following those rules to get the team on board. That meant rewriting the job description in behavioral form. We were identifying the actions and behaviors that were most directly linked to high performance. And that's literally grabbing the parts of the franchisor's SOPs and saying, manager, this is what you're responsible for, you know, looking for and doing, and then doing that for every other role in the organization. Then we used a behavioral assessment. We wanted to know, are these managers kind of in their DNA? Are they well suited to a role like this? Do they have that naturally? That leadership quality, the coaching quality. We reoriented our interviews around behavioral questions, top grading type questions, tell me about a time when, and let them prove that they've been through that, like you like to say, been there, done that. They've been through these situations before, and they've demonstrated success. And at that point, you can look at your current team and see, are these managers who are willing to focus their entire energy and role on making sure the team is following through with process.
Right.
If they're not, if they're the kind of manager that's either too soft because they just want to be friends with the team, or they hide in their office because they're more comfortable with the Excel spreadsheet, which candidly, that would be me if I was in a retail role. So not everybody's suited to this role, but at least you understand the drivers of it. You know who is naturally suited. And it's on us, I think, as franchisees, to put the right person in the seat so that they have the best chance of being successful.
Yep. So I'm going to, you know, the name of my show is Franchise Pitfalls and Profits. So we've been talking about the pitfalls, but I don't want anybody to walk away from viewing our interview today and say, well, that's all nice, you know, but that's a little too soft and too fluffy. Talk about, if you don't mind, you don't have to give specifics, but if you don't mind, talk about how you felt this converted into profitability for the stores.
Yeah. So there were kind of two hits to this. One was the longer that you manage through process orientation, the more consistent you are with that, you get compounding returns because your employees are staying longer. It's a less volatile environment. You're not changing pay structures all the time. You're not doing new incentives and contests. You start to anchor your business to the key drivers. And that, with our managers, we did something very important, which is we decided we're going to pay them very competitively, very well. And we're going to do that by taking a portion of the salary and making it about 25% of it was performance-based. And we made sure it was tied to the main KPIs of the business and ones that couldn't be gamed. That's a whole other conversation. But most franchisees take a manager's bonus, they look at it as a cost center, and then they start changing the metrics depending on what's going right or wrong in any given month. And that becomes a KPI whack-a-mole. The manager doesn't know where to focus. Keep the manager focused on the most important KPIs. And what you get is great returns. When we did that with our European Wax Centers, our EBITDA in a year-over-year growth, we took it from, it was a 40% year-over-year growth, hundreds of thousands of dollars difference for us across all of our stores.
Right.
By making sure we got the right managers in, we compensated them correctly, and we incentivized them to drive the right parts of the business. And it made a dramatic difference for us.
So if the audience is listening, I want to go back and just highlight this for you. If you're listening, you have a single store or you're multi-unit, it was a 40% increase. Do your own numbers, but take that 40% and recognize that this just isn't touchy-feely about employees and so on. This converted into real numbers, real dollars, real profits. Ross, I got two last questions as we kind of bring things to a close. Talk about now what you're bringing to the marketplace yourself. Talk about Epic Managers a little bit, because I just find this fascinating. So give us a couple minutes on that, and then I have one other final question.
Yeah, so I think, you know, all good operators know in franchise that when you have a great manager, your profits go up, your turnover goes down, and your sanity increases. It's just, it changes your entire experience with your business. But it's hard to find good managers. The interview process is an ever-changing landscape of, you know, what the next generation is looking for. It's a very fast-moving market now. It's not the kind of thing where I'll call you back in a few days. You got to be Johnny on the spot with great candidates. They're few and far between. And we struggled with that ourselves, finding great candidates. And we felt like this is an area that needs to be solved, because having that great manager is such a key part of a location doing well, that if you don't have that person in place, it doesn't matter how good of a methodology you have to run your businesses. And so we're just determined to solve this. We've created through building our own processes to find great managers. We've created a pretty elaborate process whereby we have a done for you service to find top talent managers for unit and area level franchisees. We work with a lot of multi-unit franchisees, and we're really wanting to solve this issue, this gap in the marketplace of being able to reliably find great talent.
That's awesome. And again, I'll go back to the 40%. It is more than going to be worth it not to have to cycle through several different people working with Ross and epicmanagers.com. You're going to have a fast ROI on this. I'm confident. So awesome, Ross. So last question. I always ask this question, and it is simply that, you know, the audience, you shared a lot of information, and is there anything else that, as you were preparing to share today and join me, anything else you wanna leave about what you guys do, about the things we've talked, or about franchising? Is there anything else that if you left after here talking to me, you go, oh, I wish I'd have said that? Any final thought for our audience?
Yeah, I do always kind of leave it with this, which is we're just as passionate about helping great managers find great jobs as we are helping franchisees find great managers. And we think it's a shame for this is part of the economy that is so important and yet, you know, is an unsung hero, right? There's so much work that's done at that service level, the retail level, and the managers deserve great jobs as well. And Epic Managers is just as much about that. We think that if you can solve the problem from both sides, that's the strongest solution possible. So we're pretty passionate about getting this right, and we're going to keep working on it till we do.
Awesome. All right, Ross, thanks, man. Again, audience, epicmanagers.com if you want to hear more about this. And I hope you got a lot of value. And Ross, thanks for pouring into the audience. I appreciate you.
My pleasure.